Good morning. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with Larice Brown, the founder of C-Track Training. Good afternoon in your case, Larice. How you doing?
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing well. Well, we had our first podcast right as everything was shutting down, April of 2020. So things have probably changed a little bit in the world, I would say, in the last 2 years. Would you agree?
I definitely agree. Things change in the world, and things also change in the work that I do, which is reflective, I think, of the changes we saw in the world and in the workplace and in schooling. And that's what I hope to talk about today.
Well, great. That's a great transition. So why don't you tell us all about C-Track Training and what your real focus is now?
Yep. So C-Track focuses on sharing insights, real life solutions, and recommendations that help students and professionals speak up, speak with confidence, take ownership, and also transition to management. Specifically, when we work with students, though, we're helping them answer two questions, right? What's the best job for me? And what's my best next step? And so what I'd love to talk about today, which is which we saw the beginnings of, especially 2 years ago during the pandemic, were the ways school has shifted and the way we are thinking differently about how to prepare students for the workplace.
Well, that sounds great. So, I mean, we'll just go back 3 years. I mean, everything was, you know, pretty much the same as it was 10 years before that.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic hit and school scrambled. We have to be honest. They really had a tough time at first. So what have you seen has really been the big transitions that they've, you know, because now it seems to be pretty much, I wouldn't say back to normal, but things are certainly calmed down.
Right. So one, I think it curbed some of the idealism around online education as the future. It's not to say that there aren't benefits to being online and that we didn't benefit or have ease or convenience related to remote learning, but we really saw disengagement happen. Or we saw that, what we also saw was an emphasis not just on the content there, but also the accountability around the content. And that's where people found a lot of value in the teacher, but also in-person classrooms, right? Like, it's like, you can show up on Zoom and say you're there, but are you receiving the content? Are you able to ask questions? And do you have community that supports you in persisting? So I think that's one thing to take away from it, is not throw the baby out in the bathwater and that we could never find value in remote learning, but not jumping to, okay, we would be entirely effective in educating students if we were entirely online. I think the other thing we saw as a result of the pandemic, the shift in schools, is we had students drop out. And a lot of that's because the pandemic was economic, right? People were losing their jobs. And so there were many reports about how students who were on the precipice, right? They were about to graduate. They ended up leaving school to help support their families. We also saw a big, huge drop in enrollment in college overall. So I think what happened with the pandemic during schools, especially I'm specifically honing on high schools. If I speak more broadly, I would talk about social emotional learning. The fact that the isolation, even though students, again, being online, not having the opportunity to build connection, to foster the type of belonging, again, that supports persisting, I think is a big takeaway for everyone now. And they're emphasizing that in elementary and high school. But I would say for high school specifically, we saw a big emphasis on, or a renewed interest in, how does education and how does this degree or diploma get me economic advancement?
Yes. And you talk about the alienation factor, which that was real. There were a lot of kids that, especially high school, I mean, your friends, I mean, they're everything to you. Your parents are kind of like, oh, they're over there.
That's right. Alone.
Your friends were everything. And all of a sudden, this is the only way you could talk to your friends. That had to have a huge effect on those kids.
It did. You know, and I've heard this, I'm hearing this from high schools, but especially colleges, as they're bringing their student leaders back. It's a sense of hopelessness, mm-hmm. right? It's we do count on other people to motivate us, or even if we're self-motivated, right? Often what we're doing is for ourselves, but for the benefit of an outcome that may be for the group or a project. I think what we're seeing from students is one, building the muscle again of being connected in person. Mm-hmm. But I also think trying to hold that space where you acknowledge that even though we're back here, we're not back to normal. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? And how do we acknowledge that while not, I'll say, dwelling, for lack of a better word, right? We can't change what happened, but how do we learn from it in a meaningful way? And also, you know, this generation is better around their consciousness for mental health. Mm-hmm. I don't think they've Well, maybe they have actually, because I had 10 interns from New York City Summer Youth Employment Program. And I don't think they've rejected hustle culture, but I think they're more conscious that a toxic anything is not just in a relationship, but also people can be toxic at work. So I think there's a consciousness of environments that they're in and how that could impact them. And so again, going to the conversation about mental health and wellness and well-being, I think they, students want to get back into it, but I think students are more conscious of the kind of support, I should say, that they need from their advisors and their peers to perform at their best, which means they have to feel like they belong.
Mm-hmm. And I think as a society, we kind of lost track of that these are young kids and they do need adult supervision, right?
Yes, they do need adult supervision. They need guidance.
Yes.
I mean, specifically, I think our brain we don't fully understand consequences, or our brain, there's some part of our brain, maybe it's the prefrontal cortex, that's not fully developed till we're about 27.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody holds on to the idea that 18 or older, I think that has more to do with the draft than anything else.
Right.
It certainly doesn't have to do with our decision-making abilities. But yes, they need guidance. And they need, in that guidance, also a space to fail. So if I were to connect this conversation even more broadly, I think when we talk about one of the ways society has shifted, you know, people don't do, careers have this implication of I'm going to be here for the long haul. Mm-hmm. I think we are in a job society where people might get 4 years out of you. But I also know that people switch jobs every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so specifically, my intention around mentioning that, though, is there's a lot that has changed. And I think we have to recognize the ways in which the world has changed, society has changed, but also how our expectations of students as they transition from education to the participating in the economy should change as well.
Yeah. And interesting. I've raised both a boy and a girl. And they're both successful people in their 30s now. And there are a few tough years there. But right. I think you'll agree that the young boys, especially when everything went remote, the boys will be happy just playing video games all day, right?
Yeah. But there's a sense of competitiveness in video games, right? It's not just, right. And there are skills. I've read many reports. There are skills that are honed in on a video game. So.
Yeah. And the girls tended to stay more, you know, hey, I've got to learn this. I've got to learn this. I've got to learn this, right?
Yes.
And society doesn't really, I don't know, maybe it doesn't distinguish from them at that age, but it was a different ballgame, I think, for the boys than the girls. Would you agree? I think the girls probably did a little bit better during the pandemic than the boys. You work with them directly. So what do you think?
Research says that school in general is better for girls than it is for boys. And there's a whole movement around it, specifically when you consider that school requires more compliance. And actually, and even though people will say, you know, academically competitive, but in the day-to-day of a classroom, we ask children to sit for extended hours, right? We ask them to comply with that. We ask them to follow instructions, not saying any of these things are inherently bad, but to say that there isn't that space to say, okay, you know, how can I do this my way?
Mm-hmm.
Like if we look at competitiveness as, okay, this is the broad framework I've been given, but a young boy's testosterone is like, how can I do this my way? Or even what testosterone does in a young man's desire to move, mm-hmm. right? Sitting, I know my nephew, when the pandemic hit, we were having conversations around his grade. And one thing that was really helpful about the pandemic is after he finished a session, he could go outside and play basketball for 20 minutes and come back. Mm-hmm. And so I, just in general, a lot of the research supports the way school is set up. Women tend to do better in it because of, again, its focus on compliance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, that thing about doing things my way doesn't apply to just teenage boys.
Yes.
I'm still that way, right? And I was fortunate during the pandemic, you know, golf courses opened up pretty quickly. I'm like, man, I'm going to get out and play golf.
Yeah.
I got to move.
And that's what a lot of it is, right? It's this urge to move that's not built into schools. Mm-hmm. If you get recess, I think now they're trying to like have different desks and, you know, maybe you can sit on a ball or maybe you can stand, you know, some of the things we do at work, but overall there isn't an understanding of people need to move and more than just the like 30, 40 minutes we give them space to.
Yeah, and that's why it's good that they do have their extracurricular activities, because they have something to look forward to at the end of the day. I have a nephew that loves baseball, and school's kind of there, and he just can't wait to play baseball.
Right, and I think that's the other piece of it, too, that you're bringing up, is there's a sense of they talk about a lot of anxiety in this generation, right? But there's a sense that you are your academic achievements, which, I mean, I grew up with that understanding, like, do well in school, and this is a marker of your success.
Right.
But I think it has hit overdrive, and you can look at some of the trends, right? Teens are not... I think people were looking at lifeguards, right? Because that was the number one teen job at one point. And people just saw that job was not being filled, and it certainly wasn't being filled by teens. We saw this overemphasis on achievement, specifically college prep programs, which, again, none of these things are by themselves bad, but it goes to your point about, you know, there's school, there's extracurriculars. And I think for this generation, some of the pushback is when you invest a lot in school and that form of achievement, but then you also realize that achievement doesn't translate to skills you need or you can immediately apply to the real world, right? Because academic learning is a lot of recall. It's a lot of discussion of ideas and theory. And it's also a lot of, what do they call it? Like studying. Studying is like, I forget what they call it in Gagne's Five Theories of Learning, but the idea that like rehearsing and studying those things are not things you see show up exactly the same in the workforce, but they're heavily emphasized in school.
Yes. And it's interesting because I remember in college, I was a computer science major, and you know, I would, if I had an assignment that had to be done in 2 weeks, I would wait till the 13th day.
Right.
And then just be at the data center all night. Right. And that doesn't work in the real world, does it?
No. That's why they're trying to emphasize more project management. And what also happens in school, which is interesting, how did you feel about group work in school?
It depends. If I was with a couple of cool guys, I liked, yeah, but no.
Right. It depends. Mm-hmm. But even the way, one of the reasons they want to shift towards project management is what you said, right? Because you want to plan things over time. That tends to be how work works with dependencies. But even the way we do group work in school, doesn't translate to work, because it's very much like, for me, it was like, listen, it has to get done. So even if I have to do it all, you aren't going to do it. Like the schoolwork has to get done, which is not how things work at work. I mean, that's not to say sometimes you don't have to pick up the slack, right? But really you're supposed to go into groups that are collaborative based on people's strengths. And that's where the dependency comes from. Like, okay, Mark, you set up the questions, I'm going to answer them. Or, okay, Mark, once you have the project outline, then it's going to come to me and I'm going to write out the I'm going to give an overview to the marketing team, right? Or it's far more connected on competency than it's set up in academics, which is just, I think maybe it's equal efforting we're looking for when we do academic group work. You know, it's just like, did you do this and did you do this? And that also doesn't set students up for work, because work is highly collaborative. It's increasingly collaborative, but it's also not, if you come from an identity of, I can do it all by myself, that's destructive. If you come from an identity of, I can skirt by, that's also destructive. You really have to know what you are contributing to the group and then be willing to be accountable to the group for that outcome. We don't do that well in academia, and that is harmful for students when they do come to work.
Yeah, and I would say that 16 and 17 year olds don't really have the skill set to work collaboratively. You know, they're either going to be what you said, the first one is, I can do it all myself, or, oh, they're better at that than me, I'm just going to goof off, let them do it.
Right. Well, I think what happens is, you know how, so, you know, one of the top skills people ask for in job descriptions is people to be coachable. Mm. I think what people miss about coachability for students is, one, just as you mentioned, some students just learn, like adults, asking for help is a bad thing. That reflects poorly upon me. I should know. And so that doesn't lend itself to coachability. So I think we have to encourage students to ask for help. And also underneath that, which is some things you just don't know. And the only way you learn it is by asking. The other piece that we don't do well with students, and this, like you said, goes to the 16 to 17 year old pieces, is give them feedback. Mm-hmm. Right? I think we do. I'm not saying we don't give graded papers and we don't have rubrics, but I don't think often we give them, I think we're very clear in things that they shouldn't do, but the corrective or the preferred behavior and what the outcome of that is, we don't give them that either, right? We don't. So if we were, the best thing, so to your point about, you're right, 16 and 17 year olds, it kind of is just like, you take this, you take that. But I think if we could give, if we had a way to give them feedback or coach them on giving at least peer feedback, mm-hmm. I think those would be more valuable experiences for them, at least because it would build some self-awareness and accountability to a group.
And it's interesting that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like there's not as much of an emphasis on going to college now, right?
No.
I think 20 years ago, it's like, you got to get a degree, you got to do that. And I think, you know, people, and this might have something to do with the pandemic, people are like, you know, maybe you don't need college, right? Stanford and Princeton, they're awfully expensive. There's a lot of people with student loan debt that, you know,
right,
but don't have job skills. And I'm not going to say, yeah, I mean, right. Stanford and Princeton obviously put out people with good job skills, but.
Right. Well, you know, let's talk about this. It depends on the game we're all taught to play. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, my parents were born in 1951. So I was told, if you work hard and you go to school and you'll be successful. And I took that very seriously. Right. I went to boarding school in Middlebury, Connecticut. I went to Gettysburg College, graduated magna cum laude, first Black student commencement speaker, went to NYU. Right. And so you do all these things and then you assume that there's a translation from getting all these degrees to the economy. And specifically for Black women, right? Black women have, I think, the most number of bachelor's degrees and the most numbers of master's degrees, like in proportion, obviously, to the population.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say this, right? We can cut it different ways. I think one of the ways is, it is a myth to tell anyone you just go to college and you'll be successful. I think 20 years ago, because there were not that many people who went to college, the degree itself at least gave you a signal to stand out. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, you at least had a notch above someone who didn't. So I think one thing is not painting things broadly, because even the statistics around, if you go to college, what program did you pick at the college? And then being able to look at that program as a map to a market. I think the other part of the conversation that these students are knowing, you're right, is about the cost of college. And when you look at the ROI on return of it, it's not there, as evidenced by, right, the student loan conversation. People have different feelings about forgiveness, but we all know that the debt is T with the trillion, right? Like, so there's a lot there. The other piece of the conversation is, we are not a country where everybody has yet to graduate high school, right? Most Americans have only gotten to high school. And so college in that way is, I understand why people want to see it as a next step, but in my mind, our logic is better served by saying, okay, we know we're going to have the most students in the system in high school. So why don't we use high school as a place to give students these fundamental skills that they'll need for work, knowing that many students won't continue beyond this. And then I think the final piece of it is, I think if you cut it, most of the job growth, they call it middle skills jobs, right? Mm-hmm. We want people to go a step beyond high school, but they don't need a four-year college degree. It's talking about what makes a middle skills job, or also talking about what's next after high school. There are apprenticeship programs. There are associate's degrees you can get. There are also certifications, licenses. And these are not just, people will say, oh yeah, trades. And that's dismissive, right? Of course, mm-hmm. there's trades, right? There, my brother is in school to be a welder. There's plumbing, but there's also STEM jobs, mm-hmm. right? There's like surgical technician. There are other jobs. There's land surveyor that have nothing to do with, well, maybe land surveyor actually might fall into trades, but, mm-hmm. but there are healthcare, technology, engineering, even math jobs that do not require a four-year college degree and are well-paying, but also in demand, right? Some of this mm-hmm. is economic. We are sending people into programs with the belief that this job will be here, and the job is either changing or it's on the decline. So again, I mentioned that, but there's lots of factors in why college isn't viewed as this guaranteed, this absolute that it used to be. And it's everything, you're right, from the expenses of it, to students recognizing that, you know, there are other options that they can take to also lead them to skills they can use directly on the workforce.
Well, I mean, I have an interesting, my son's an interesting case in that he went to a very reputable four-year school in the Bay Area, got a four-year degree in mechanical engineering, got a job out of college. 3 months later, he got laid off.
Right.
And wasn't quite sure what to do. And I said, why don't you learn how to code? He went to a coding boot camp, 3 months, didn't pay for it. They actually, the way they paid for it was they took 18% of his first year's salary.
Oh, they did it. What is that? An income share? that they
Yeah,
call it?
and
Yes.
he now works with me, and I know he makes a good, he has a good salary.
Yes.
But it was 3 months of training, not 4 years.
And that's the story these students are after. Now, the reason why I see when we snip this podcast, we should use that part, because a lot of what I hear from guidance counselors is in high schools, their effectiveness or their grading is how many students end up going to college. Mm-hmm. And what they're asking for are examples of students who went through other programs. I don't like calling them alternative. That has a connotation to me of inferiority. We could talk about that offline, right? People are like, there's alternative means of skilling. I think it's more appropriate to recognize that there are other trainings or there are other programs that can get you to the workforce quicker. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what your son did. And that's what I believe students today are looking for. I think the problem is they don't get that advisement.
Right. And the one thing I would advise, though, if you're right out of college or right out of high school to do a 3 month boot camp, you're not ready to go into, you know, coding full time, I would say. Yeah, there's a certain maturity that comes with a 25-year-old man that's not there with a 19-year-old man or woman. Would you agree?
Well, you know, so there is, yes. Is there emotional maturity? Absolutely. Does a 25-year-old have a more emotional maturity? And again, that's an abstract word, right? But let's ground that into an ability to take feedback. Mm-hmm. An ability to recognize that they know one way, but somebody else can have another way that might be more effective. Mm-hmm. For the solution, right? And also to resolve conflict without meaning that, like, oh, you know what? The ego gets in the way of continuing the relationship. And so absolutely from that space, and that's how work is done at work, right? We work with other people. So defining emotional maturity in that way, I would hope that 25-year-olds have far more than 18-year-olds. And that is important to getting the job done. So yes.
And to bring this all together, I'm assuming this is what you work with C-Track, with helping these young kids, correct?
Yes. So what we found, you know, what I found in my work with students, what they wanted, I'll end like this. They had a message for parents, teachers, counselors, and employers. And their message to parents was like, things have changed, right? Mm-hmm. You'll send us out and you'll say, go get a job. And we'll tell you like everything is online, right? But what they really want from parents is their permission to go a different way. Like, mm-hmm. if I don't want to go to college, do you still trust that I'm making the best decision for me? Which I think speaks to all of our needs to just have our parents understand us, right? But what they also want their teachers to know is that the teachers they feel most connected to are the ones who understand their interests and seek to implement them into their lesson plans. So mm-hmm. which ways can we connect academic core subject learning with some career learning? What they want from their counselors is they feel very beholden to their grades, right? Counselors don't have a lot of time. They're usually far fewer counselors than students. So counselors are going to do what's most efficient, which means let's look at your grades and let's see what program that's best that, you know, you can get into based upon that. Students think that's not fair. They think that they are a whole person, but also their academics. You could have a rough patch, you know, and it doesn't reflect their future capabilities. And what they wanted employers to know is that they do want to work. They just want a shot. You know, when everything is digital and we have these talent platforms that sift through resumes, it is more difficult to get your shot, especially for students who don't have an established network or who, you know, are really just trying to get the experience. They'll say, like, you all say you don't need experience, but then you reject us because we don't have experience. So where do they get these first experiences from? So I would say the work we do at C-Track is recognizing increasingly that students value training programs. And next steps after high school that are career focused. And so what we do is we work with them to identify where they are, right? What career that they want, and then clearly help them find a program that gets them there so they can get a better return on their education.
And that is a very worthwhile profession or skill that you are providing these kids, because they do need it. I've raised two, and you know, it's tough out there for these kids. It's not like when I went to college, it was, you know, you're right. Get good grades, go to college, get a job, you'll be set. And that was true because I've been employed for over 40 years.
Yeah.
The degree in computer science, but.
Right. In computer science. Exactly. When you picked something that was growing, well paying, in demand. It's funny, as you were saying, it's right. It's like, go to school, get good grades, graduate, get a job, become a manager, get a house. The whole thing is blown up, right? Yeah. The next podcast will be on how, like, that entire framework that we sell students from the get good grades to the get a house has blown up for this generation.
Well, it's interesting because you know, digital nomads, that wasn't really a thing 15 years ago. Now it's an industry.
It is. And the emphasis on content creation, right? Mm-hmm. Like that these, it is a skill set and a very valuable one for this generation, right? Content is everywhere. And they want to learn that. And this is mm-hmm. also an increasingly entrepreneurial generation, to your point about digital nomads. So, I mean, there's a lot there, but I am eager to see the way school systems continue to respond. I think anytime you get private and public together, then we have some interesting conversations about the economy. So I am interested to see the way companies respond, whether that's in looking at the qualifications for a job. I think that's an ongoing conversation, but I think we're going to do better, I hope, culturally. And you used a very important word. Both your children are successful, but not making that a narrow one size fits all definition of success. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to do much better with that. Yes. When it comes from transitioning from education to employment.
Yes, I would agree. Well, Larissa, I think I could probably talk to you for hours about these things, but we are limited on time.
So yes, we are.
I want to thank you for joining us again today. Hopefully we can do this again. We don't have to wait 2.5 years for the next one. And it's Thursday, so it's almost Friday for you. So have a great weekend.
You too, Mark. Always a pleasure. Thank you.